everybody, and welcome to Jersey Boys Sports Talk. I know you haven't seen my face on here in a while. I'm Joe Caprera. I'm your guest host for the week, and with me, as always, is Byron Jones. Victor's not with us this week. His father passed away earlier this week, so our thoughts and our hearts are with Vic down in Florida, and you know, and with his father Tony, and hopefully Vic will be back next week. But you know, keep Vic in your thoughts and your prayers this week, because you know his dad Tony meant a lot to him and meant a lot to all of us. So that's something that is on all of our minds this week. And we love you, Vic, and we miss you, and hopefully you'll be able to rejoin us next week. So we do have a lot to talk about. The big news for Giant fans is still obviously Saquon Barkley still not signed, and who knows what's going to happen now. It seems like every story you read has a different take on whether or not he's going to even be with the team this year. So what do you think, Byron? Where's your heart at on this one?
I'm sure you remember this guy that ended up, he was with the Jets, who we'll talk about later, Le'Veon Bell, when he decided to set out the year with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and we see how that worked out. There was a couple instances where, Saquon had put out there, well, maybe I'll sit out. And, people tell him, that's probably not a good idea, because it usually does not work out, a running back or just any position where, you're going to sit out a year. He's probably, I'm not going to get anybody's pocket, as far as, their money, whatever, but he was offered allegedly, during a bye week last year, whatever, 13, 14 million a year, whatever it was. And, they turned it down because now, and I'm sure that it's a bad running back market. You got Ezekiel, you got, all these other guys that are still sitting out there. Tomlinson, the guy with Minnesota is out there.
Yeah.
And all these dudes are sitting out there and not getting paid. They did, tag him with the $10 million tag, for running back. But, it's either you take it, you leave it, what do you do? And, that's just a lot of things I would blame on his agent not knowing the market, that, this could have possibly happened. But he just, I want to see him come back. I don't want to see him sit out, but he's got a lot of decisions to make, because July 17th is the last day for that.
Right. And I love him as a player. I thought that was a great pick, and I think he's an electric player, but the league has really changed a lot, and running backs are not as important and can't really be as dominant as they were even, when Tomlinson came in the league, 5, 8, 10 years ago. So I think it's easy for an agent or even for a player to overestimate what their importance can be. But I think also there's maybe some people within the organization overestimating what this team can be and, what Daniel Jones can be. What do you think the ceiling for this team is anyway next year, with or without him?
Without him, it's not going to be good, because when you look at the numbers, when he didn't perform in the second half of the game, season, they weren't a very good team. They wasn't, they was all right. But, they really need him, because, the option with him being able to run the ball, and catch the ball, offensive line is better. Well, allegedly this year, yeah. Hopefully Daniel Jones has gotten paid, to be a franchise quarterback now, $160 million or whatever it is. They had to pay the guy, had to.
But did they have to pay him quite that much? That's my question.
But what else are you going to give him? But then the crazy thing is, he's getting $40 million now, but then you have Jalen Hurts is at 50 or whatever he's at. You got Justin Herbert, his is coming up. You got Joe Burrow, he's definitely going to be 50. You're going to have Mahomes, he's going to be, once these guys said whatever, he's going to go over top of them, even though he does have the $500 million contract over 10 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, but, Jalen Hurts, Burrows, Mahomes, those guys have earned that money. They are, they are great quarterbacks. Mahomes keeps winning Super Bowls. You got to pay that guy whatever it is you're going to pay that guy. Daniel Jones hasn't shown me really anything yet. He's shown me that he's not terrible, but I don't think you're right. That's what the market pays decent quarterbacks. And he's not terrible. He had a good year last year, but I don't know. I have very little confidence in this coach. My co-host Matt Baker on my other show is a big Giant fan, and he's got a lot of faith in this coach, in Brian Daboll, and he's got a lot of faith in Jones. I don't see that quite just yet.
The key is that they kept Daboll. He's a good coach. He really is. He's a top 10 in my list. But they also, you know, kept Kafka, you know, the offensive coordinator. He went out and was looking at, you know, a couple of teams were looking at him as far as, you know, head coaching. But they would be able to keep, you know, those two together. But hopefully, you know, Daniel will keep the interceptions down, which he did, the fumbles down, which he did. And he did it with, in my rankings, the 30th ranked wide receiver group. the wide receiver awful. And then, you know, they had Kenny Galladay is gone now. But right. They're paying him, you know, a fortune. And, you know, he's off the books. But then you have, you know, Darren Waller, you know, the tight end they got from the Raiders. So if he's not hurt, he's a top three tight end. Bellinger, you know, the other tight end is, you know, very, you know, he's a rookie last year. He got hurt when he got poked in the eye, you know, during Jacksonville. And he can be, you know, as good as, you know, anybody in the league. And, you know, they went out and signed, you know, other, you know, speed receivers because they do want to attack more deep. You know, but it's just, he got paid because everybody else is getting paid. You know, Jalen Hurts, you know, with him, he's gotten better every year, you know, from right. Oklahoma, you know, from Alabama to Oklahoma, you know, his first 3 years, you know, and, you know, Philadelphia. But then they also, with him, he has a number one ranked offensive line, has a number one ranked wide receiver group, you know, Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown and the tight end, they have the weapons around him. They have the offensive line around him, you know, for him to be successful. Daniel Jones didn't have that because his line sucked.
Yeah.
Saquon, you know, he did his thing, and the wide receiver group sucked. So I'm going to give the guy, you know, he got his money. You know, they didn't fix the line, allegedly. So, you know, we'll see, you know, how he's going to play this year.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the line is huge. That line was that was the worst line in football. Maybe the worst line in one of the worst lines in football history. They were awful. They were like absolutely awful. I actually thought about making a comeback last year and showing up, knocking on the door last year because that line was terrible, and you know that cost them a lot and almost cost them his health last year because he was getting battered around.
Yeah, he got sacked 44 times last year. So, you know, that's still a lot.
Yeah, so maybe some of that contract was hazard pay. So whatever happens, they're going to show some improvement on offense just because their line's a little bit improved. You know, they improved greatly at two positions at least. So we'll see how much of an improvement that reflects overall with the offense. But unless Barkley comes back in time to practice a little bit before the season starts, I don't think it's going to matter much, because as much as the position's been kind of de-emphasized, you still need that guy to take some of the pressure off of the quarterback, especially if you can't really put together an A-level receiving core in the time they have left now before the season starts. So
Saquon, you know, he has until, you know, July 17th, you know, to sign, you know, the contract. So he'll be ready, you know, he'll be in camp if he signs by then. And you really don't want him, you know, it's okay to like keep him out of practice a little bit. You really don't want to bang him around, you know, practice. He's going to get banged around the game. You know, sit over here, you know, run through the plays, because he has been working out, you know, supposedly with Daniel Jones at some school up north in Jersey that they were spotted together.
Well, and the good thing is too, like it's not like the two sides seem to be like, they don't seem to be angry at each other. Like things seem pretty civil so far. So it's not like he's furious. And, you know, like you said, he's working out with his quarterback. It's not like he's off in Europe somewhere, you know, drinking wine and sending angry Instagram messages.
I would.
Yeah, it sounds nice actually right now.
Yeah, it does.
But so hopefully once they get, get ink on paper, it's just, he's just a cab ride away.
Oh yeah. I'm sure, he's probably in the area, and, once they finalize, between, the front office of Giants, his agent, as soon as he signs this contract, he should fire, those agents, for having him in this position, because they should have, either taken care of it, during the season or right after the season or in January or whenever. Instead of, now you're dragging it out, and you just really don't want to upset, the balance as far as, with Daniel Jones, prove off the line, and you need that running back. But you also need, since they do, most of the teams aren't running back by committee, that, you need that second guy. Matt Breida is the second guy, or, Jason Corbin, or they drafted Kip Mokahome in the sixth round, Eric Gray. So, one of these guys, maybe if he's not in, they're going to get more reps, and, we'll see how these guys work out.
I like Breida. Breida can be a number one. He was really good in San Francisco. I think he can be a number one if he has to be. So give me numbers. What's their win ceiling with Barkley and without Barkley?
Oh, man. With Barkley, 10-7. Without him, 6-11 without him.
I mean, I think 10-7 is realistic. I actually think 6-11 might be a little bit pessimistic, but you never know. So much depends on the quarterback and how much progress he makes after last year. So
yeah, but like on the defense, when they're still trying to figure out who's the number two guy behind Dory Jackson. They drafted a rookie from Maryland, number one. Deontay Banks is just, projected second corner. They're still, with the edge rusher, even though they have your guy, Thibodeau, he's still, he only had 5 sacks last year. And then, Ojulari, the other guy is always hurt. He put up numbers, but he's always hurt.
Yeah, I'm looking less and less like a genius on that one, with every passing week. But I still stand behind my guy, But we'll see. But we forget too, there's really only one good team in that division. So,
yeah, those guys, the one that lives on the street from me, the Eagles.
Yeah. And there's, they certainly have not taken any steps back this year. So, there's two losses there, and who knows what's going to happen with the Commanders. They've got the vote on their sale.
Right.
So
I think with them, don't be surprised if they're a little bit better than what people think. They have a good wide receiving group. Brian Johnson, the kid from Alabama that got shot before the season. He's not a bad running back. Their defense is a top 5 defense. So if they can sort of, fix the quarterback position, with Sam Howell, the kid from UNC. He was pretty good, too, at USC. Yeah. And now since they have Eric Bieniemy is now the associate head coach and offensive coordinator there. Well, maybe they can surprise some people, with their play.
Well, I think whatever happens, maybe the karma from flushing the Snyder family out from the corporate suites will help everything else. The opposite of poop rolling downhill. Maybe like whatever the opposite of poop is, the good stuff will start to roll downhill, and maybe
the crazy thing with them is that the back in the day, Washington Redskins were like one of the preeminent, organizations in all the sports, with Joe Gibbs, the success they have with him. But then all of a sudden when they get this guy, first when he got there, he signed, was it Bruce Smith, Deion Sanders, another, high price guy, trying to buy, a championship. And ever since then, it's sort of been pretty bad, for a long time.
Well, I think this is actually great for the team, because if he had stuck around, there was a pretty good chance that they were going to have some sort of punishment from the league for all the crazy stuff that he was doing, all of his kind of, administrative malfeasance, all of the things that were going on inside that organization, I think were going to result in some, whatever, docked draft picks, some pretty hefty fines. There was going to be some kind of punishment from the league coming down on that team. So I think this is the best thing that could have happened to that team is to get him out of there. So hopefully the league will rubber stamp the sale and there will be no more Snyders in that building anymore.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm thinking they're trying to hurry up and push him out. This is my opinion. You know, my opinion only that they're trying to push him out the door because you figure he knows he's got all the dirt on.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, they're going to go ahead and try to push him out the door, you know, like you said, a lot quicker, you know, to get rid of him. So maybe he'll just go, you know, hey, you know what, you know, we're going to do this, but, you know, don't say anything about what's going on. Because, you know, his hands were a lot of stuff between with him and the John Gruden mess and the Bruce Allen and all these guys. And you don't think they got receipts? They have receipts.
Oh, yeah.
All the stuff that's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, I am waiting to see what some of the stuff that comes out with all this. Because like you said, the Gruden thing is big. Because you know there are a lot of emails sitting on a server somewhere that are going to make a lot of people in the league look very bad, including Mr. Robot Commissioner himself. So, you know, he's very quickly trying to figure out how to delete a lot of the stuff. He's got a lot of phone calls into some, you know, the Geek Squad and a lot of these people trying to figure out how to cover some old tracks, you know.
Yeah, but how was it? And, you know, speaking about that for a second, how is it that John Gruden is the only one that got hung out there? How is it that he's the only guy that suffered the consequences?
Well, that's the thing. That's what I mean. There's, you know, there's more out there. And so it's just there's other shoes waiting to drop. And I think somebody had something they need. You know, somebody needed him out of that position. Someone needed him gone from where he was. And they found an easy, quick way to get that done. And so they got that done. And now when the next guy comes up that someone needs to be gone, they'll pull out the next pile of emails, whether it's Goodell or some other coach or some other GM. Or I thought it was going to be Snyder, but apparently, you know, there's another way out to get him out of there that involved whatever $6.5 billion. But that's the kind of hardest part for me to take of all of this. You know, Snyder's gone, but he's getting his money.
Right. Like
Snyder's the one that's going to go be in a villa in the south of France somewhere. He's getting out of this with all the comfort in the world. There's none of this is punishment for him. This is the most golden of parachutes that he's sailing away on.
Yeah, but how is it that poor John Gruden, you know, whatever he said, you know, whatever he did, is the only guy that they took him and they set him up on a pedestal, said, here you go, and they blasted this poor guy. They blasted this poor guy. About the
that's
thing. And it's like it's other people that said stuff too. So why didn't that come out as well?
Well, we talked about this a lot on our show, and that you are 100% right about that. He's certainly not the only guy, but that doesn't at all change what he said or make what he said any less horrible. So, like, I'm fine with him taking the punishment he took, and my point is that these other guys that, you know, these presumed other guys that probably said things that were just as bad, if not worse, are probably going to get theirs at some point down the line. And I'm going to be there to jump on them just as hard when they get theirs. So again, just, you know, I'll sit here with my little timer ticking away, my little hourglass, flipping it back over again. I'll be here filing away Freedom of Information Act requests until we find all this stuff. That's the problem, too, is that the NFL is not a public entity. Like, they're not a government organization. No. We don't really have any access as journalists to this stuff. We have to wait until it gets leaked or until it becomes part of some other investigation or some other public hearing, some other legal action. So it's going to come out. It's going to come out at some point. I was hoping actually that some of these Snyder, Daniel Snyder legal actions would uncover some of it but apparently he's just going to go away before any of that stuff comes to light.
$6 billion or what?
Six and a half, something like that, which is absolutely absurd. I remember when I was a kid, the Yankees sold, George Steinbrenner bought the Yankees for $10 million from CBS. $10 million. The Yankees now are worth, you know, $4-6 billion. It's absolutely absurd what sports franchises are worth now.
Yeah. No wonder these guys get them. Once they get them, you know, those 32 different teams, once they get them, they're like, no, I'm not selling this till I die. No.
Well, and Washington, that team is terrible. It's not like they've won anything in 30 years. You don't even have to be any good to be worth $6.5 billion.
But maybe the TV contracts that they get and cable thing, and then you got Amazon and all these different, mega companies, are wanting to, have this on TV, and it's a moneymaker. And they were talking about, like, the other day with the teams, the games they're going to play in Germany, and they sold out in 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's the leagues that make the leagues and the franchises that are run well that make that lift these franchises at the bottom. It's the same thing in the NBA. It's the Lakers and the Celtics and the Knicks that make the Timberwolves and the Grizzlies worth something. And even those crummy franchises are worth $3 or $4 billion.
Yeah, Michael Jordan's getting ready to get a ton for his team, the Hornets. He's getting ready to sell his. I think they said he bought it for $237 million. I think he's selling it for $2 or $3 billion now.
Wow. But I'm all for Jordan making his money. You know, he deserves every penny. And I can't wait to see what LeBron James does when he becomes a franchise owner, because that's obvious.
They're going to make him the commissioner.
I'd rather see him own a team. I think he could do more that way. Yeah. Certainly financially,
Yeah. Maybe he'll get the Cleveland Cavaliers, go home.
Oh, love to see that. So I guess we can move on to the other side of the building up there, whatever they're calling it, MetLife Stadium now. I can't keep track. These buildings change names every 6 months now. So Instead of going after Lamar Jackson, who could have been had for like a bag of dirty sweat socks 6 months ago, they traded away pretty much their every second round pick for the next 11 years for a guy who's older than me and just about as talented at this point. This guy, Aaron Rodgers, who I feel like only wanted to come to New York so now when he goes on the Pat McAfee show and says something stupid, he gets a lot more attention for it. But the guy's washed up. He's done as a quarterback. His best years are long behind him. He's better than Zach Wilson. I'm glad they got rid of them, who's probably the worst second overall pick in NBA draft history, NFL draft history.
There was somebody worse than that, though.
Who's that? Who you got?
Tony Mandarin.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. But here's the thing now. I feel like with quarterbacks, you're not, as a franchise, you're pretty much putting yourself behind the eight ball by picking a quarterback in one of those spots. You look at all, go back over the last 6 or 8 years, the best quarterback in the league now is Mahomes, who wasn't taken until what, 7th or 9th?
17 or yeah.
Right. Like when you take a quarterback 1st or 2nd or 3rd, the only thing that can happen is for that guy to be a disappointment. So I think you look at the Jets' track record for drafting quarterbacks. They've had like 3 terrible draft picks in a row as far as taking quarterbacks that high. So if I'm a GM in the NFL, I'm not taking a quarterback until pick 10. I'm certainly not using first rounders on quarterbacks anymore.
Even if they're generational talent like Trevor Lawrence?
But even Trevor Lawrence, you can, you know, where was he picked? Sixth?
One.
But do you know, do we know what Trevor Lawrence is yet? Is Trevor Lawrence Pat Mahomes?
No. No. But he's coming. He's going to be there.
And if he is Pat Mahomes, can't you get him 3 years later? If your team is still bad and you've got that number one or number two pick 3 years later, can't you get Trevor Lawrence for next year's number two pick and a couple of veterans and a veteran cornerback and a 2025 first rounder and a couple of seconds?
Okay. Let's go back in the memory banks. Peyton Manning, number one pick, right? The choice was either Peyton Manning or the other guy that was, what was the one from Washington. I can't think of his name. He was a troublemaker. Those two were, you know, the one and two pick. And, you know, Peyton won out because, you know, he was a better, you know, he was a study of the game. He's basically just a better player. The other guy had, you know, he was 6'5". I got to remember his name. 6'5", throw the ball 70 yards down the field.
Oh, Ryan Leaf.
There you go, Ryan Leaf. So yeah. You had the choice between those two. And look how that worked out. It took Peyton Manning. You know, he was fine. And this guy was all over the place and, you know, all kind of trouble. Trevor Lawrence is a generation. You know, he's a talent. The kid is good. He really is. And the problem is that he had Urban Meyer was the coach there with him. And that just didn't work out at all. And now he does have, you know, Doug Peterson, who is he was a quarterback himself, and you know he's going to, make the most of this kid's talent. But you know, the crazy thing is, I picked Zach Wilson to be Rookie of the Year on this show 2 years ago when he first came out. So I don't know what I was thinking of. You know, I think my head was going to explode. And then when I tell you this other thing, your head is really going to spin around. You might spin around a chair when I say it the next thing. But I'm going to hold off for a second.
Go ahead, spin me.
You want to spin? I pick Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets to go to the Super Bowl.
Oh, this year?
This year.
Oh, if the Jets go to the Super Bowl this year, I will fly you to the Super Bowl.
You're not going to spin around in a chair?
I don't want to wrap myself in my headphone cord here.
I picked them because he's going to be like a kind of sort of like a Peyton Manning when he got to Denver. You know, he was on his last leg. You know, Aaron Rodgers not on his last legs, but he's close. He's got 2 years and that's it. The Jets are surrounded with good receivers. Am I right?
They've got a pretty solid team around them.
Yes. And they have a top five defense. And all he's not there to, you know, carry the load, you know, everything. He's got a good run. He's gonna have a good running game. You know, Breece Hall comes back from, you know, the knee injury. Garrett Wilson, a wide receiver, you know, Lazard, wide receiver, and they got a bunch of good receivers, the tight end, the offensive line is kind of with Becton, but the defense is top five defense. But I'm going to pick right now, I'm going to say it again, I'm picking the Jets to win the East and go to the Super Bowl.
I will happily come on the show in January and apologize to you over and over again. And this is going to sound like a contradiction, but you know, going back to the draft thing, I would rather deal, especially at that position, would rather deal with a known quantity. And instead of spending these, you know, I would rather have seen them spend that number two pick on more defense or on a receiver, which is a much safer pick, or an offensive tackle. You know, there were a lot of great linemen at the top of that draft.
Yeah, but you don't take them number two. You don't take, you know.
Why not take a tackle that you know is going to be anchoring your offensive line for the next 15 years? I'd rather take a Hall of Fame offensive tackle at number two than a Zach Wilson that's going to flame out after 2 years.
See, but with the whole offensive line thing, you don't know for sure if that guy is going to be, you know, the guy for the next 10 or 15 years. You know, everybody's so caught up with, you know, the quarterback position that, you know, if they see, you know, the Trevor Lawrence, like next year is going to be, you know, Caleb Williams from USC and the kid from North Carolina, Maine, you know, those guys are going to be at the top of the list, you know, for next year. But then, you know, they just don't, like, the year Saquon came out, the Giants should have taken Quentin Nelson, the guard from Notre Dame, that, you know, right. Jersey guy. They should have taken him with that pick, or, you know, traded down, and they probably still could have got this guy. But, you know, look at him. He's been, you know, all pro or whatever, you know, the last 4 or 5 years. You know, we've gotten, you know, 2 good years, you know, out of Saquon. But, you know, they're always going to take, you know, in my opinion, they're always going to take the quarterback over, you know, the offensive lineman when, you know, they really, you know, you got to have the guy to block for.
Right, but that's been the draft strategy for the last, whatever, 10, 15 years. And how many times has it worked out? I'd like to go back and look at all the quarterbacks that have been drafted in the top, whatever, top 10 picks and see how many of them have actually worked out. I'm guessing it's probably like 1 out of 5. So you just threw out those two names for next year. One of those guys is going to stink. One of them's going to be great. One of them's going to have no career. One of them's going to be a Zach Wilson. I would rather wait 3 or 4 years and get Lamar Jackson at a bargain price, or wait 5 years and get Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert went with the 6th pick. And if you wait 3 more years, you'll be able to get him like Lamar Jackson, you know, where he'll be up for a new contract. His team won't be able to afford him, won't want to re-up him, and you'll be able to get him for, you could have had Lamar Jackson 3 months ago for like a first rounder and 2/3. And in a couple of years, that'll be the case with Justin Herbert. There's no GMs have any patience anymore. And teams will keep spending these second rounder, you know, second overall and third overall picks on quarterbacks who are going to flame out after 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, but they want to get these guys, like, you know, okay, you draft the quarterback. This is part of it too, where they, you know, you draft the quarterback number 2. So basically you have him for, you know, the next 5 years on his rookie deal. You really don't have to pay him until, you know, the 4th year, you know, going to the 5th year, whatever it is. So if he's, you know, trending up like Justin Herbert, they're going to pay the guy. He's not going anywhere from, you know, the Chargers, because, you know, he has performed from day one. So it's going to cost him a fortune. He's going to get $50 million or $55 million or whatever he's going to get a year. But, you know, as long as these guys are trending up, they're going to go ahead and pay him. But if they're not, when they get to, you know, like Daniel Jones, it happened to him. He got to year 5. They're like, you know what? We're going to make you pay for that, you know, play for that money. And, you know, it worked out for him. But most of them, like Mitch Trubisky, didn't work out for him.
Or then you end up like the Jets did, where Zach Wilson doesn't work out. And now they got to pay 72-year-old Brett Favre $140 million next year.
Because Woody Johnson wants to win now.
Because Woody Johnson is 140 years old.
Is he that old?
What's he? He's got to be in his 80s, right?
No, I don't think he's that old. I don't think he's that old.
But now they're paying Zach Wilson to go scoop ice cream.
Hey, you know what? He's got the best job in all of the NFL. He's making a ton of money, you know, probably, you know, at least $10 million, you know, to hold a clipboard, you know, to wear the headsets, and, you know, basically be, you know, be Aaron Rodgers' caddy.
To run scout team, yeah. Woody Johnson is 76.
Okay.
He's running out of time. Yeah, you're right.
He wants to win now, right now. Not now, but right now.
Well, with this Aaron Rodgers contract, they got 2 years.
That's all he's going to play is 2. I don't think he's going to play any more than 2.
Well, you said they're going to win it. They're going to win it this year. So
they're going to win it this year, and then, you know, he's going to play next year, you know, to defend his title. You know, they're going to get knocked off, you know, in the playoffs or whatever next year. He's going to ride off into the sunset.
Well, I believe you said something about Daniel Jones was going to be the MVP last year, didn't you?
That's my guy, man. I'm gonna ride that horse, man.
That's the
part.
That's true. You are hopeful, and I am the eternal pessimist, but I've been a Jet fan for 40 years, so I think people will understand why I'm a pessimist. But
I know. Speaking of that, we're going to throw this out there. I was looking at something today, and they said there's who is the greatest player in Jet history? Who do you think is?
Might be Darrell Revis.
Really?
I can't think of any. I mean, if I'm going to go back, you know, ancient history.
Go back, ancient history.
Probably Don Maynard. But I think if you want to talk about modern era, it's either Gastineau or Revis. I think.
You left Revis, one guy out.
Who did I leave out?
They always forget about him. Joe Klecko.
Well, I think Gastineau was probably a half a step ahead of Klecko. Gastineau had better numbers and was a little more feared. Got a little more double team attention than Klecko. But I think Revis, coming a little more recently, Revis was pretty universally regarded as the best at his position in his time. So I think I'm going to stick with Revis.
Oh man, I'm going.
But I can't really argue too much against Klecko.
All pro, three different positions.
I'm going to stick with Revis because in his day he was the number one cornerback, and corners also. Corner was a more critical position than I think the edge rusher spot was a more important position maybe now than it was in Gastineau's time. And both those positions, both corner and D end, were always a more important position than the internal D line spot. I know that's hard for you to accept being in. An internal D-line guy yourself, but again, I'm sticking with the 24-99 over 73,
I'm sticking with Klecko, man. I love that guy.
You can make an argument for any of those three, and I think any longtime Jet fan would accept any of those three as the answer.
Okay, I feel better now. Because I met him, man. He's pretty good. He's a really nice guy.
Yeah, Klecko is a good guy. My friend Dom worked for NBC doing camera work for a long time and has met all these guys. And he loves Klecko, like really loves Klecko.
And lives right down the road in Marlboro, New Jersey.
Oh, does he still?
Yeah, right down the road from where I used to work at in the sheriff's department, right straight down 33.
Oh, wow. And also kind of avoided all the off the field problems that a lot of these guys have had, Gastineau and LT in particular.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Klecko's
Wayne Corbett too. He lives over there too in the same area.
Oh yeah. Another guy that's always been really popular with fans, was always really good to the Jet fans. Although I don't think you can include him on the list of greatest Jets of all time.
No. If he hadn't had all them concussions, maybe he might be in the, it could possible.
I mean, I think Krebet gets a spot on the Ring of Honor, although I don't know how big the Jets Ring of Honor really should be.
It's pretty big, man. They got a lot of players, man, from back in the day, man. Joe Namath, we figure Don Maynard, that left tackle that played forever. The Brickershaw Ferguson should be on there.
Yeah. Yeah, and Mangold too,
but yeah, Mangold should be there.
I don't think it needs to be more than a dozen, 15 players. They had Wesley Walker.
Yeah.
Lamb Jones. We had a lot of good players in the 80s for a bunch of teams that were terrible. Freeman McNeil, always loved that guy.
Don't forget Keyshawn Johnson.
Love Keyshawn Johnson. Had some pretty good linebackers back then too in the 80s.
Yeah. One of my teammates from Tulsa played for them. Tom Baldwin played for them too for a while.
Yeah, it's about the same era, right? Like late 80s.
Well, early 80s.
Sorry, I forgot how old you were, Coach.
Yeah, man, I'm old.
So let's move on from irrelevance to stupidity. We've had a few more players get caught in this gambling idiocy here. So you and I were talking a little bit about this before we started, before we came on the air. How dumb do you have to be to get caught up in this nonsense?
Very. Because, okay, I'm sure at the orientations when they have, in the NFL, when these guys first get there, no betting on the games, no betting on, fantasy football, no, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. They're told. So if you go and you do it anyway, you get exactly what you deserve. You deserve it.
Well, right. And these, we can go back more than 100 years. One of the biggest sports stories of all time is the Black Sox thing. That was 1918, that a whole team got kicked out of the World Series, for gambling on the World Series. Everybody knows about that story. They made movies about it. Yep. So if you don't know that you're not supposed to bet on sports, and the punishments are very severe. Paul Hornung, you mentioned, got kicked out of the league. Players lose their whole careers. Pete Rose got kicked out of the league, is kept out of one of the greatest players of all time, cannot get into the Hall of Fame. But you mentioned fantasy football. I think part of the problem is that these are these are games that anybody can pick up their phone and use your credit card, and it doesn't really seem like gambling. If you walk into a casino and pick up a betting slip, it's very clear that you're gambling on a game. But if you are just going on whatever these games, FanDuel or whatever, and playing some fantasy game, the lines are a little more blurred as to what. Not that the leagues don't make it clear, like you said, at orientation that these things are forbidden, but knowing that when you sign these contracts, that these things are going to get you severely punished, I still don't understand how these guys can be that dumb. But then again, we see pro athletes do dumb things all the time. Like, look at John Morant waving his gun around on Instagram, and
not once but twice.
Yeah, now he's out 25 games. He can't make the All NBA team. It's going to cost him a lot of money on it. He can't qualify for a Supermax deal. Athletes will never cease to amaze me with the stupid things they do, and this is just the latest example. So,
Okay. They tell you. Don't do, X, Y, and Z. You're told not to do this. But then, these guys turn around, and do it anyway. So, okay, you're betting with the fantasy league, football, whatever it is. So, you go on your phone, you're doing it on your phone. So you got to put your credit card information on the phone. So you don't think that the NFL is smart enough, or you put like a fake name, or whatever, you put a fake, Johnny Lightning 900, whatever, that's your playing game. So then you turn around, so you put in your credit card. We have suspicion you're doing X, Y, Z. Well, we need your phone. Well, we're going to get your phone records to see, and your credit card stuff. It's easy. It's easy to figure out what these guys are doing. And for them, some of them to constantly and continually to do the same, but knowing that you're going to be suspended for 6 games because one guy got 6, or suspended indefinitely, indefinitely means that you got to apply next year. And he could turn around and say, you know what? What you did was kind of severe. So, we'll see you, halfway through the season. And they can turn around and do that. So they can drag it out as long as they want.
And, these severe penalties that the leagues put into place were implemented years ago when the players were making, $2,000 a game, because it was a lot more tempting for them to take money to throw games. But now when they're getting paid, tens of millions of dollars a year, it should be a lot less tempting to have to, like, Why is an NFL player who's making $30 million a year playing FanDuel anyway?
Because his friends and buddies are doing it. That's why. That's the only thing I can come up with. Because if I'm a professional athlete like that, like you said, why would I sit there and want to do that? They're doing it because their friends are doing it. That's probably, one of the things I can think of.
Or the only other explanation I can think of is that it's just like the hyper-competitive spirit in you just wants to have another game to play. Well, if that's the case, go play the free version on ESPN or on Sportsline or whatever. Just keep the money out of it and keep your livelihood safe.
Yeah, but these guys, like one of them, they sit there and said it was like a $50 bet. $50. So you're going to take a $50 bet and you're going to throw $1 million, whatever he was making, $1 million, you're going to take that and just whoop, throw it out the window over a $50 bet. $50.
Yeah, if that's the case too, then, have your wife do it. Like, there's got to be a way to do it to avoid what you just mentioned, like avoid the league making those connections. Like, get a burner phone, get a prepaid Visa card from Walmart. There's got to be a way. If you really are clever enough and devious enough, there's got to be a way to get your $50 game on without getting caught.
Yeah, let me think about this. So I'm going to take $1 million contract and I'm going to throw it in the garbage because of a $50 bet. Now I'm making more than, I'm making more money than, that most people are going to make their whole life, in a 3 or 4 year period. And I'm going to take the whole thing and I'm going to throw it in the garbage because of a $50 bet or whatever the amount. That for some reason it doesn't make sense. I go to Atlantic City. I've been to Atlantic City 1,000 times. I probably have bet $20 total as many times. I just not interested in it. I don't do it, because I can't stand losing money. I hate it.
So when I was in 11th grade, we went, I don't know if they still have this, but it's called Close Up. It's a trip where you go to Washington, D.C. for, I think it was for a week. And we went, you go with a bunch of kids from your school district. And then there are kids from like two or three other parts of the country. There are kids from St. Louis, from Issaquah, Washington, and from Dallas there at the same time we were. And so one night we got together in Joe Williams' room and we played poker, and I lost like 40 bucks. I was, 16, 17 years old. And that to me at the time, that was like losing $1,000. And that was enough to cure me of gambling for life. I have never been a gambler after that. I'll bet a little bit of money. If I go to Vegas or I go to Atlantic City, I'll drop a little money on the sports book. I'll bet 50 bucks here and there, but that one night of losing at cards was enough to cure me of gambling forever. Cause like you said, I just don't like to lose money. I work too hard for my money. I don't like to see it vanish quickly.
And it does. You sit there in the slot machine next to you.
Oh yeah.
With the electronic ones, when you're set up now.
Oh yeah. You're just pressing buttons and watching your money disappear. Yeah, for
sure. Right out the window. Might as well just take it and throw it out the window. I was like, nah, I don't mess around with Atlantic City. Nah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd rather bet 50 bucks on a basketball game and watch it disappear slowly over the course of 3 hours.
Yes, that's a lot better. The gambling, no, not a good idea.
Yeah, I'm 15 minutes from Atlantic City now. I haven't been down there since I've been here for 3 months. I haven't been down there yet.
Well, guess what? It's still the same.
Yeah. And I'm still going to lose if I go. Like, I've never been good at gambling either, which is, again, helps me resist the temptation if you never win, you're not tempted.
I know guys that had the fever so bad when I was working in the sheriff's department. I was $40,000-$50,000 in the hole.
Oh.
Working for the sheriff's department, $40,000-$50,000 in the hole. And with
I mean, that's. That's half your salary.
Well, yeah, we made, we make good money. But anyway, we said that he would leave, we worked the midnight shift. He'd get off at 6 a.m, get in his car, drive down Atlantic City, and would gamble all day, and then would make it come back just enough time to work, at night. But he was about $50,000 in the hole.
Oof. I mean, that's gotta just, that's gotta just rip your heart. I mean, imagine the stress that's gotta cause you, like, all day, every day, knowing that you're just spending that much money.
Yeah, but because I guess the problem is that, you know, okay, you get a hit, it's like a high, I guess. You know, you hit, you know what, I can do this again. But then when you start losing, you know what, I can get it back. And next you know, you dug a big old giant hole for yourself.
I'd rather spend my money on drugs. At least that's a real high. That probably lasts longer.
Not sitting there, not being in a hole, you know, like that. And, you know, next you know, you got, you know, people coming to visit you. Hey, you know, you owe us $50,000. We want our money. Yeah. That stuff is real. It's real. You know, somebody comes, you know, looking for their money. But, he finally got out of it, you know, and, you know, went and got help. And, you know, he's good to go now. But for a minute, all was bad.
Yeah, and no one ever gets rich gambling. No one beats the house. Like, nope. You know, somebody's paying for all those flashing lights and all those free drinks and all the fancy carpet and all those. Somebody's paying all those dealer salaries. And it's all those people that are losing money. Like, you know, like, I learned that.
Well, you look in Atlantic City now. They sit there where, you know, you're sitting there and, you know, hey, what do you want to drink? You're just sitting there. I was with somebody.
Right, yeah.
I'm just sitting there. Hey, you want something to drink? I was like, something to drink. Yeah, it's free. Nah, I'm good. I don't even want free stuff. Nah, I'm good. No.
Yeah, I learned that when I lived in LA, because we used to go to Vegas for the weekends, and it was great because, you know, when you're poor and living in LA, you can go to Vegas for the weekend and get at least you could back in the mid 90s, and get a $30 hotel room and eat at $10 buffets, because if you're not gambling, the casino expects you to gamble away enough money to pay for that hotel room and buffet so they can make their money back. But if you're not going to gamble away hundreds of dollars on that weekend and you're going to be disciplined, you can get some deals on hotels, or at least you could, probably not anymore, but you used to be able to get deals on hotels and meals if you didn't gamble away a bunch of extra money. So we used to take advantage of that, again, 30 years ago. I look older than I am. All right. So moving on from stupidity to intelligence. So we got our last topic on the list is the five best coaches in the league.
Of all time.
Oh, of all time. I thought we were just supposed to talk about right now.
Yeah, I already did that one.
All right, so all time, I want to talk about my favorite, who's Don Shula. Again, there's a little bit of a personal connection here. The guy's got a special place in my heart, because before I loved the Jets like I did, I was a fan of the Dolphins. I always liked the way Shula carried himself. I had a big admiration. You know, you worked for my dad. You know how he carried himself. I always admired coaches that were like that, sort of had that kind of professional demeanor. So Shula was always at the top of my list for all-time favorite coaches. He always seemed like he had control of his team, control of his environment. And the other guy who I'm going to put right next to him for those same reasons was Landry.
There you go, my man. Yeah, I pretty much, you know, the same thing. Tom Landry, and because he was a New York Giant at one time, you know, assistant for the Giants, you know, back in the mid-50s, like 54, 50, you know, player and a player coach. I got a chance to meet him, you know, during my medical with the Dallas Cowboys back in the day for like a 30 seconds. You know, I spent more time with, like, you know, Gil Brandt. You know, that was pretty cool. But yeah, him, Tom Landry, and I probably would say Bill Belichick is my other guy. You know, even though he's still coaching, you know, right now, but, you know, the guy's a genius. You know, might as well say, you know, he's a weird dude. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people don't like him, but, you know, he was a winner, you know, for a long time. You know, figure with the rings he got with the Giants, you know, the rings he got with the Patriots, you know, maybe not get another one because he's not Brady, but yeah, for. As far as like a defensive coach, like a mastermind with defense, he's probably little bit above everybody else.
Can't argue with his track record, but after what he did to my Jets, I can't put him up there. Coach for a day, sorry, can't put him up there.
Yeah, that was crazy.
So the one guy I want to put on the list because I love his I love him for his off the field career as much as his on the field career is John Madden. I remember picking up his first book when I was probably, 17 or 18, and it was just called "Hey, Wait a Minute, I Wrote a Book." It was after his TV career had gone on for a while, and John Madden had a kind of an amazing life after he was a coach, with the bus. He was afraid to fly, and he was always so like unashamed to tell his story and was a great storyteller. And I love to tell stories and I love a great storyteller. So, and he was also an amazingly successful coach, was the first coach to win 100 games in his first 10 years as a coach. And, those Raider teams were so much fun to watch. And this guy had probably had more fun and was kind of the anti-Shula, the anti-Landry with his coaching style and his personality. So might be kind of weird to see me have both, have him up there with those two, but I love John Madden. So he's up there too.
Well, don't forget the legacy he left behind, Madden Kings.
Yeah. And also like Parcells and Shula, all the guys that coached under him that went on to great careers. And the other guy I want to mention, Chuck Knoll, who had just an amazing career with Pittsburgh, and again was kind of battled Landry's teams for so long, but another guy who left a huge legacy behind him. And I want to throw two modern coaches on there that I think we can't leave out. Mike Tomlin, who has been around now for so long. I don't know what it is now, 15, 16 years.
15 years, yeah.
Now where, 3 or 4 years for a coach is a long time. And that guy has had not a single lick of controversy around him. He's one of the most respected human beings in all of sports. Cannot say enough good things about Mike Tomlin. And so he belongs right up there. And one more modern coach, current coach, Pete Carroll, is another guy whose players will run through a mile thick brick wall for him.
Yes, they will. Yeah, he was the DB coach when I was in Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was there.
Super
stories about him playing basketball all the time. Yeah, he does.
It's super smart guy with a really, really rich life outside of football. Pete Carroll is a fascinating dude, and I like hearing him. Anytime you have a chance to hear him talk, to hear him speak or do an interview, pay attention to Pete Carroll. He's an interesting guy. Thanks for watching, everybody, or listening, or however it is you're tuning in. And again, Vic, we miss you. We love you. Hopefully you'll be back next week. Wish we could be down there in Florida for your dad's memorial. And again, this show's dedicated to Tony Orocho.
Yep. My condolences, to the Orocho family, Victor, Mike, his whole family. He's a Perth fanboy guy, his dad, back in the day. It's sad, but he lived a long life. He's a veteran, can't forget about that. Served this country, I think Korea and Vietnam, a couple tours. And it was great, that, Victor did get a chance to spend time with him, toward the end, he's around his dad. And, I'm just sad that, it's just the way life is. People can't live forever. And, he's just not going to live forever. And, it's just wonderful that, he did have that relationship, with his father.
I think 88 he was. And 88 years is a fantastic run. I can only pray that I get 88 years. And Vic, you were there for me when my dad died. So I'm just glad I was able to step in and fill in tonight for you and get the show in. But we miss you. We love you. And hopefully we'll see you next week.
Yep.
Thanks so much, Vic. Thanks, Byron.
All right. Thank you again.
Take it easy, man. Talk to you soon.
All right.
All right, man. See you. Yep.